So she looks like she has it all together. She's successful, driven, and constantly achieving. But behind the scenes, many high-achieving women are silently battling burnout, perfectionism, and the pressure to keep doing more. Today's conversation is one every ambitious woman needs to hear. So welcome back to the show, everyone. We're about to bring you a conversation that's going to educate you, inspire you, and empower you. Today, we're joined by two incredible women who are passionate about helping people thrive, both personally and professionally. So returning to the show is Dr. Susan Landers. She is a neonatologist, author, and advocate for women's health and well-being. And throughout her career, she's cared for thousands of families while becoming a trusted voice on burnout, motherhood, and finding balance in demanding careers. Joining her today for a wonderful fireside chat conversation is Dr. Alicia Newsome. She's the founder of Body Wellness Institute and an expert in helping high-achieving women prioritize their health while leading with confidence and purpose. And today, together, they're going to explore why perfectionism has become an epidemic among successful women, how leadership and constant achievement can lead to burnout, and the practical mindset shifts every woman can make to create success without sacrificing her well-being. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Susan Landers and Dr. Alicia Newsome. I hope you guys enjoy the conversation.
Thank you, Lisa. It is my pleasure to have Dr. Alicia Newsome here with us. She is actively participating in corporate wellness programs and coaching leaders in corporate America. And what I'm hearing from average working moms who interact with me on my newsletter, Moms Matter, and average moms who are my daughter's age in her late 30s, who are working full-time and raising kids. What I'm hearing is that they're all fried. They're all burned out. They're all trying to do everything and be perfect in every aspect of their lives, and they don't know how to get unstuck from this really sticky situation of doing everything so very well. So, Alicia, please kick us off with the symptoms that women should look for to recognize that they have pushed the envelope too far.
So thank you so much for having me here today. And I definitely understand. I'm a mother in my 40s. I have three kids and I own my own business and work, and do all the things. And I've experienced burnout myself as well too, when I had first had my little ones, and they were both in diapers, both 2 and 3 years apart. They were 2 and 3 years old. And had them back to back. And I would see patients all day and I would hurry up, go pick my kids up from daycare. And I would just hurry up and feed my kids, get them ready for bed because mama needed to go to bed. I was exhausted all the time. I could easily, when the weekends rolled around, I'd head to a friend's house. Maybe someone's having a potluck and, everybody's bringing food over, ready to hang out. And then I sit down on the couch and I just fall asleep because I was tired all the time. And those are early signs and really later signs of burnout when you're just tired all the day, all the time. Even if you have a full night's rest and then you still wake up and you're exhausted. You need coffee to get through the day. You're struggling with like brain fog or trouble focusing or even decision fatigue. That's a big one as well too, when it's just like, I don't want to make another decision. I don't want to think about what do we got to eat tonight or what are we doing this weekend? Like just where like making little decisions become really hard. That can be signs of burnout as well too.
What I noticed in the NICU when I was practicing and running back and forth between the hospital and three kids at home was I felt like I wasn't doing anything well enough or good enough. I felt like I was sort of leaving my kids in the lurch because I was working so much. And when I was at work, I felt like, well, am I doing a perfect job for these babies and their parents? And so I would stay extra hours. I would not shut down at 5 or 6 p.m. to go home. And I would carry my stress from work home with me. That was a huge red flag for me. And somebody told me to set an alarm for 5 o'clock and whatever I was doing at 5 p.m., put it down and go home. And that was one of the biggest impactful things that I did to make more time for myself and more time for my children.
Yes, I love that. You and I align so much, because my book's Worthy of Rest and then yours is Good Enough is Your Superpower. And it both just goes on these like underlining threads and thought processes that women have. I'm almost finished with your book too. It's so good.
And, thanks.
You know, where we don't feel like we're enough, you know, it's like, I'm not good enough at what I'm doing at work. You know, there's still always like a milestone, something for me to achieve, something I didn't get done. And then as a mother, a wife, like all these different roles, I definitely used to feel that, where it just felt like I'm not enough, you know? So I love that idea of that you have, I call them transition routines, where we transition from work to home, you know, and actually doing something that's almost like a ritual between activities to also let your nervous system and your body know, okay, now I'm turning off work and then I'm moving into work. So that could be as easy as like turning on a song that you love. It could be, you know, using some essential oils. It could be taking 5 minutes to use a coloring book, you know, doing something that you really enjoy, even if it's just a few minutes, to really let your nervous system and your body know it's time to turn off work. Just like we do with our kids when they're little, we get them ready for bed. My son knows when I say it's time to go take your bath, he's going to take his bath. We're going to, you know, wash him up, lotion him down, put his pajamas on him, read a book to him. And he knows, all right, now I'm going to bed, right? We as adults need to create things like that for ourselves. It can be very helpful in transitioning into different parts of our lives.
I try to transition in my 40s. I would come in the door and tell my kids, give me 5 minutes. And I would go to my bedroom and try to meditate. And, you know, there was still noise outside or soft knocking on the door. And of course, it didn't work. And then I discovered that if I drive into the garage and I sit in my car for 5 minutes, I was listening to Enya, you know, real soothing music, music to do yoga and meditate by, and breathe and try to let go of what stress I had at work that day. Those 5 minutes were golden. It was how I learned to enter my home. And then I gave my kids the attention that they needed and wanted. And instead of talking about my stressful day with my husband, I could pay attention to what they wanted to tell me about their day. And I could ask what had been challenging or good for them. And that single transition, the 5 or 10 minutes before I walked in the door, helped me so much to unload my work stress.
Yes, you got to do it before you hit the house, get into the hit the door, you know, go inside, because those kids will knock. And, you know, it's already like mind is going on like what everybody else needs. So definitely before you get into the house. I work from home, so I have to create like my routine, like in my office before I like cross the threshold going into the rest of the house.
Yeah. So, but there's still a threshold. There's still a transition.
Yes.
And that's a good point, because we have to recognize those door jams, whether we need to put our hand up and pause and take 3 very deep breaths, whether we need to kind of step back and pause and sigh. Once I learned breathing routines, I was so much happier. I used to think breathing was sort of automatic and no big deal. But when I learned that the physiologic sigh, taking a big deep breath and then a little top off and then a huge exhalation sigh, when I learned that that was a stress reliever, I used it a lot in my work. Yeah. And then at night, if I was laying in bed ruminating about whether the PTA slip was signed, whether the pediatrician appointment had been made, whether the parent-teacher conference was scheduled, what was my husband doing and was he pulling his weight, and all the things we ruminate about as mothers, I learned that 4-7-8 breathing was so effective. You take a deep breath in for 4 seconds, You hold it for 7 seconds. And of course, you're counting to yourself, which distracts your mind from your ruminations onto your breathing. And then the 8 is you exhale for 8 seconds. And I had to do that 3 or 4 times in a row, 4, 7, 8 breathing. It is a fabulous stress reliever. And you can do it anywhere, anytime. I use it in the evening to help me shut my mind down because I tend to ruminate once I go to bed. How about you, Alicia? What's your favorite way to pause and settle?
Yes. So I'm a big advocate of the breathing as well, too. I do box breathing, which is 4 counts in, and then you hold for 4 counts, and then you release for 4 counts, and then you hold it after you breathe all the way out for 4 counts. And do that 4 times. But both of them are incredible. And one thing that I find is a lot of times as moms, like we're doing a lot of shallow breathing. We don't even realize it. Like we're just like all up in our chest. Everything's tight. So breathing techniques really help us to be able to like release, take like deep breaths in and deep breaths out, which is really important. So I love that about with your 4, 7, 8, that breathing out for that long is so good, because oftentimes we don't do that.
We run our culture as working mothers on stress.
Yes.
Some stress is good, but excessive stress is not good. And what that does is it revs up our sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight part of us. And whether you hold your breath or whether you breathe shallow, when your sympathetic nervous system is keyed up, it's tends to stay keyed up unless you teach it to settle down. And that's what the breathing does. It stimulates your parasympathetic nervous system, which is the calming rest and digest. So physiologically, breathing exercises work really well for handling stress acutely. It's not the only way, but it's a great way when you've lost your mind and you feel on edge and you just need to take the edge off quickly before you interact with a child who's driven you up the wall. Any of those breathing techniques will innervate and activate your parasympathetic nervous system to settle you down, to calm your nervous system, and then you can reset. And it really does feel like a reset.
Yes. Yes. The parasympathetic nervous system is so important because that's where our rest comes in, our digestion. So we call it rest and digest. Also baby making, like hormones. Even if you're done with that stage, you still need those sex hormones. And I always give the example that if a bear was running after you, right, your body goes into that fight or flight state, that sympathetic nervous system. You're either going to fight that bear or you're going to run away so that you can get to safety. So once that's done, typically our body should go back into parasympathetic state. Our bodies were only created for like short term stress, like fight or flight, get rid of the danger, go back into rest and digest. But a lot of times we stay in this sympathetic dominance where we're always kind of on edge, fight, flight. And I always say, if there was a bear running after you, the last thing your body would think is now is a great time to make a baby, right? Those sex hormones that are so important for so many different functions in our body, even beyond making babies, our body is going to say, no, right now we're focused on survival, even digestion and getting nutrients from our food. It's so important to be very intentional because the world and culture that we live in is go, 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 go. It will have us stuck in that sympathetic state. And there's no bear.
Right. When there's no bear. So why is it that women tend to take on so much and set high goals for themselves, especially accomplished women? And even when they accomplish something, college, a graduate degree, a certain certification, they feel good. But then, okay, what's the next thing? Why is it that women who are accomplished tend to achieve and seek achievement and overachieve? Where do those messages come from, Alicia?
I think a lot of times they come from our childhood and also traumas, big T, little T, just like small things that have happened to us, big things that have happened to us, where we tell ourselves stories about ourselves that aren't necessarily true, or people have told us, you know, where we feel like, you know, I'm not good enough, or you might feel bad, or I'm wrong. A lot of times we'll default into a younger version of ourselves, like almost like when we're triggered, something happens and then we're like, oh, I'm not good enough, you know, or I'm always messing up, or nobody ever helps me, right? We default into these, what I call their stories, you know, that aren't necessarily true, but we believe them. They go back into maybe like an 8-year-old version of ourselves who maybe was told that, or had our feelings hurt, or we were the person that wasn't picked. And that comes up a lot of times in situations. And I'm really big on, for women, for us really acknowledging the emotions that we feel. So a lot of times when things happen, I was always taught, push it down, like push through, keep going. Ran track, and our motto was go hard or go home. You know, like our coach, you could throw up on the side of the track, but she's like, go home then. You know, so I was trained very much to like keep going, push through, don't acknowledge what I'm feeling. And I've really had to train myself to pause and allow myself to acknowledge what comes up. So when something does happen, the first thing that I do is acknowledge what's coming up, you know, and sometimes emotions are one word, or feelings are one word. I'm sad. I'm angry. I'm frustrated. It's not all the thoughts that we have about it, but it's just that one thing. And sometimes we need to stop and acknowledge what's going on. Okay, I'm sad right now. And then I'll ask myself, okay, well, what are you making it mean? And I'm making it mean like I'm not enough. Nobody ever chooses me. People always leave me. I have to do everything on myself. And what I do is I recognize that that's not true, right? There's tons of people in the world that are willing to help us, right? We don't have to do it all ourselves, you know? And what I do is I really acknowledge what I'm feeling. I acknowledge the thought that's going along with it. And then what I do is I resource myself. And when I say I resource myself is that I'm a woman in my 40s. I'm very knowledgeable. If my daughter, who's 14 years old, came over to me and said these things to me, I would mother her. I would let her know the truth about herself, that she's more than enough, that all things in life are working out for her good. You know, I would tell her what is true. So I have to do that with myself and acknowledge what's true and tell myself that before I make any decisions, before I say, well, now it's time for me to go get another degree or another certificate or go for the promotion or whatever it is, I make sure that I'm making decisions from the resourced adult version of myself versus the 8-year-old. I don't want the 8-year-old driving the car of my life. I have to tell her, okay, I'm going to put you in the back seat, give you some crayons, acknowledge how she feels, but making sure that I'm making decisions from a part of me that's not triggered.
You know, about feelings, one of the best things a psychiatrist ever told me was feelings are not facts. Yes. They are just feelings. And when you take those feelings and do what Alicia just described to make sense of them, that's very helpful. And there's another step to that. Women love to talk to other women. We get very much comfort from that, whether it's about an author, whether it's a neighbor, whether it's a work colleague. Studies have shown, and I can attest, that when you have a work colleague, you feel so much better. If I had lunch with another physician and a nurse practitioner, both who were women, and we chatted about what was going on with our teens or with our younger kids, I felt lighter at the end of that lunch. And if something happened bad in the NICU and I was sad about it, I would go to my favorite work colleague and say, this is so sad, I can't stand this. And they would commiserate and I would feel lighter. It doesn't make it go away, but it makes sense. And you don't feel so alone. You feel supported. It's another least women talking to other women. Provide understanding and support in a way that I think achieving them under issues.
Yes. There's also the part of that when we're experiencing that connection with another human being, that we're producing those same hormones that we produce when we're breastfeeding our child, you know, when we're that oxytocin that's coming out.
Oxytocin.
And that often combats that hormone cortisol, that stress hormone, there as well too. So that
connection, and especially when we're able to have deep connections with other human beings, it does wonders for just how we feel inside and also our physiology as well, too.
I've been reading a lot about longevity and how to deal with aging since I'm tired. And of course, exercise is on the list. And social connections are on the list. And I know all the working mothers are rolling their eyes going, but I don't have time to exercise. And I'll tell you a couple of stories. I took a friend with me to yoga class on Saturday. We both did it together and we enjoyed it. We held each other accountable. And because I took that friend with me and we made a deal to go every Saturday, it was helpful to both of us. Now I do resistance training with a group of older women at the gym and we're all like buds. And I get the biggest kick out of connecting with these women. I never knew them before in my working life. One was an editor, one was a nurse, one was a businesswoman, we're all different. And we get the biggest kick out of lifting weights together in a class for older women. And so social connection, in addition to exercise, especially tied to exercise, even walking around the block, is crucial for working women who are highly stressed.
Yes, I have a couple girlfriends that I alternate throughout the week. And we go walking, there's just down the street, you know, and we'll go walk. One time we looked up and we had walked 7 miles. we're just like completely enjoying each other's company and talking and everything. It was like, okay, well, we should probably go home to our kids at this point, you know, but it's like so good to attach, like you said, attach that social connection, blue zones. There are areas in the world where people live over 100 years, the communities there, and connection is one of the core pillars that they found of the people that live in those areas. They have deep connections and community with other people, along with movement and the way that they eat, and also a sense of purpose as well, too, as it was something that they have found in those communities as well.
In my 40s and in a job that I didn't like, I would bring home a lot of stress, even transitioning at the door before I came in. And my son was, he was 12 or 13 at the time. He had joined a track team at the school the kids were at. And so he and I would go running together in the neighborhood. And so it's not always just for the girlfriend that you do something. If your child wants to do something, especially outdoors in nature, it's a great way to diffuse stress and to listen to your kid because they always talk as they loosen up. And they're the one with mom, and it's only them and only you. They are ready to let you know what's going on in their minds. And I found that such an amazing experience. I cannot tell you, it didn't last more than about 6 months. But while it lasted, I had a great time reconnecting with my preteen son.
Yes, kids, such an interesting journey being a mother, you know, and one thing, especially since my daughters are teenagers now, it's like I do a lot of listening, you know, because I don't want them to stop talking to me, you know, as far as like sharing with me what's going on in their lives. So I do a lot of listening there. And you're right, just having those extra activities where maybe they are loosening up a little bit too. That's a good idea, you know. Where they're relaxing and then can talk more.
Yeah, we haven't talked very much about relationships. And I'm still a believer in married life is a good thing. And being married is a hard thing. But what I mean by that is that connection with your spouse or partner, if you have one, is so crucial for so many different reasons. If you're stressed about something that they don't understand, you can explain it to them. As long as they listen, as long as they're quiet and listen. Men tend to want to fix problems rather than sit down and listen. But sharing what you're going through with your spouse or partner, I think is crucial. because that allows them to see it from a different perspective. You will be surprised at how much empathy you will receive when you say, I've been thinking about this and this and this and this. You know, all of the invisible emotional labor that we all carry. The teachers, the doctors, the school, the neighborhood, the team, the sport, the uniform, the costume, all that stuff that we worry about as working moms, most men in general don't think about. And when you spell it out for them, I'm worried about this, 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 and this, not just your worries from work, but your worries in the household, they get a perspective and begin to understand how you're thinking. It's a very female thing, and I haven't seen any studies yet to say that stay-at-home fathers develop this invisible emotional labor like women do. Alicia, you may know of some information, but women are just burdened by all of the things that have to go on to make a household run smoothly. And we don't all have money enough to outsource. We can't hire a housekeeper or a maid. We may not be rich enough to have a nanny, but we've got a spouse or a partner that we can share with and take help with some of the load.
Yes. That invisible load, especially that invisible emotional load, is huge. You know, a lot of times there's, you know, very clear, like, did this, did that, you know, or even with that emotional load and invisible load, you don't really get credit per se for it until it's done. You know,
right.
All that went into like coordinating the kids and them starting here. My kids are starting back to school. We start back super soon, early. And, you know, all that goes into coordinating that and all the different things they need for like clothes and different teachers and permission slips. And then on top of that, we have, you know, to feed our kids and clean the house and like all these different things that we coordinate in our mind all the time really is something. That's why I was saying before that decision fatigue, you know, that's a sign of burnout when we're just like, I don't want to make any more decisions, you know, like whatever, do whatever you want, eat whatever you want tonight type of thing. And I do think it's important to have that communication with your spouse about what's going on, what your thoughts are, even the things that you have to make decisions about, because oftentimes they may not know. And when we share with them, it gives them this level of understanding. Then they're like, oh, well, I can handle that, you know?
Right.
And I know that you mentioned a lot of times husbands will want to fix things, like that's their thing. And what my husband and I do is when I'm sharing, you know, it's often good for him to know, like, am I wanting him to fix something right now? Am I wanting him to just listen, or am I wanting just like overall feedback on things? And they're not mind readers. Some husbands, you know, they've been trained enough to know to ask those, not a lot of them, you know, but also it's just letting them know, like, I just want feedback on this, or I really just want you to listen. Or like in this case, I need your help fixing this. That really helps guide them on how they can better support us.
That's excellent advice. The other tip I have for those of you who have a partner or a husband who are and you're connected in a solid way. I used to tell my husband that I felt like I was not a good enough mother. And that's where the title of my book came from. Good enough is your superpower.
Yes.
I would tell him how I was not feeling good enough. I was fine as a physician. I was getting accomplishments and notoriety and doing everything professionally I wanted. But I would always say, I don't feel I'm a good enough mother. And he would say to me, you are a good enough mother, and these are the reasons why. And I cannot tell you how much it meant to me to hear him reiterate to me what I was doing well.
Yeah.
Because we're really harsh judges of ourselves. Yeah. Accomplished women have very critical, negative thinking, inner voice. That inner voice is so destructive. We say, I didn't do that well enough. I wasn't prepared. I didn't care. I didn't handle that right. We're always just harping on ourselves. And to hear your partner say, you're really doing a good job as a mom. Your kids know you love you. That your kids know you love them. I know you love them. And when they tell you that, it really lessens the burden of feeling not good enough.
I absolutely agree. That's a good one. And it's when my husband said, let him do it.
It's just such a wild ride, working full time, raising a family, having a marriage that's stable, that is supportive of one another. Yes. If you ever, for the moms listening out there, if you ever feel like you're not good enough, if you ever feel like you've lost meaning in your or in being a mother, please, please share that with someone. A friend, a partner, a spouse, a professional therapist. Yes. Alicia is a coach. She might give us some input about the places that women can seek support when they feel like they're burned out.
Yes, I definitely think community is a big one. Having community around you, whether that's in churches or places that you volunteer, your kids' school, like having, as we talked about, a group of women or, you know, males in your life as well, or your kids, you know, just in or expressing yourself to your husband, like having that community is a really good place for support. If you're dealing with major like mental health issues, then definitely speak to a psychiatrist or a psychologist. That is very, very important to reach out for help in that way. If you're dealing with burnout, trouble losing weight, you know, digestion issues, fatigue, all of those different types of things. Oftentimes, coaches, functional medicine, that's a good place to start as well. A lot of us have virtual practices where, you know, you don't even have to leave your home nowadays. You can have lab work sent directly to your home, find out what's going on inside your body, send the test back to the lab, and then we can review your results. So there's find someone in your area or reach out to someone that has a virtual practice like myself as well, too, can be extremely
important. And remind yourselves of my book, Good Enough Yes. is Your Superpower, and Dr. Newsom's book, Rest. What's the title?
Worthy rest of and, Rest for the Woman
Worthy of Rest.
Wrong one.
What a perfect title, Worthy of Rest. Working women are worthy of rest. And when you're laying on the couch and you're not doing anything and the kids are either on their iPads or watching TV or off at a friend's for a play date and you want to do nothing and just lay there, I want you to think, this is really good for me.
Yeah.
Laying here right now, not doing anything, no cleaning, no sorting, no fixing, no buying, no nothing. This is good for me.
Yeah.
And I want you to remember that rest and recovery are crucial for our modern lives.
Yes.
Alicia, would you give us some final pieces of advice for working mothers who might feel like they're burned out?
When you had brought up the thing about rest and recovery, it made me think about professional athletes. And at the highest level, they rest and they recover. You would never see, you know, LeBron James or, you know, a high-level athlete just go every single day, practice, you know, go throughout the day without having those days where they have recovery. And it's so important for our body. It's so important for our physiology. And it's so important for our calling and our purpose here in life, you know, whether that is with our children or with our work and all the things that we want to do. If we run our bodies into the ground, then we don't have anything left for us to fulfill our purpose.
That's such excellent advice. Please, working moms out there, take it easy on yourselves.
Yes.
That inner voice that's negative is really hard and harsh, and you need to tell her to be quiet.
Hop in the back seat, yeah. Tell her I get it. Hop in the
yeah,
back.
Yeah, tell that mean girl to sit down in the back seat and strap in and shut up because you're doing the best you can do.
Yes.
I love that image of putting your childhood in a harsh inner voice in the back seat. That's yes. Great.
Yes.
Oh, Alicia. Dr. Alicia Newsom, thank you so much for your invaluable comments. This has been a really fun conversation, and I hope all the moms listening have enjoyed our little utterances of realism and advice.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me today. This has been a really good conversation.
Thanks. You're so welcome. Thanks.